All right, back on the Young Turks, Cenk and Anna with you guys. Not a lot of time, so I'm going to just read two quick tweets for you. I Am Sock says, who would have thought that Ted Cruz could potentially be not the most hated senator? Mm-hmm. But Republicans do find a way of outgrossing one another. Mr. Squirrel says, who the hell hate watches something just to get angry? Well, Mr. Squirrel, I got news for you. Almost all of our right-wing viewers. So keeping it real on that front. And yes, today is the first day of Rebel headquarters. It's going to be at 8:05 p.m. Eastern. It's the Progressive Hub, and we're going to share information with you guys on what's going on in progressive politics and news. Also exciting news, it's double points this week on shoptyt.com.
Damn.
Yes. When you log into a rewards program on shoptyt.com, you share your referral code, share a post about our products, or follow us on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook, you'll get double the points in return and double the savings on shoptyt swag, is what I am told. And Christmas is around the corner, so do that right now at shoptyt.com. All right, Anna, what's next?
All right. The wildfires in California have been making national headlines recently, and for good reason. There have been several fires that were difficult to contain. Some of them haven't even been contained yet, and people have lost their homes as a result. But something interesting has come up as a result of these fires that most people don't know about. About one third of people who fight fires in the state of California are actually inmates. And since California has reformed its prison system, there are now less inmates who are available to do the job of professional firefighters. So The Atlantic wrote about this, and it was just such a great illuminating piece that I wanted to share with you guys. According to the numbers, though, more than 3,700 men and women and even some juvenile offenders now voluntarily serve on the force. Collectively, they make up roughly a third of the state's wildfire fighting personnel. Inmates also work shifts up to 72 hours straight to contain the blaze and protect the property residents left behind. They do the hard work, such as clearing the brush and other potential fuel. Also digging containment lines, often just feet away from the flames. So they're closer to the dangerous components, while other firefighters, the non-inmate firefighters, are usually a little further away and they have the professional equipment to work with. But it's just interesting to see how right now there are politicians and officials in California that are like, oh my God, we don't have enough nonviolent offenders that we're imprisoning to help do this indentured servitude for us. By the way, California inmates receive between 8 and 95 cents an hour. By contrast, fire camp inmates can receive much higher pay, $1 an hour when they're actively fighting fires, and $2 a day when they aren't. Okay, so that's okay, what's
wait,
going on.
Okay, wait. I want you to understand that. Mm-hmm. That's not between $8 and 95 cents. That's between 8 cents and 95 cents. So if you think minimum wage is bad, and it is, it's horrific. It's $7.25. That gets you $15,000 a year, okay? Wait till you get a load of 8 cents an hour. Mm-hmm. So when we're paying people a dollar a day or $2 a day, that's not even indentured servitude. That's just slavery. That a dollar a day is slavery. Okay, 8 cents an hour is slavery. So now we're a little concerned that we don't have enough slaves to put out the fire because we're not imprisoning enough people anymore. Oh, golly gee, that's a big problem. How about you actually pay firefighters? How about that you know, they talk about taking away jobs. Oh, the immigrants are taking away jobs. No, we're locking people up for doing something perfectly normal like smoking marijuana. Then we're using them as slaves. Mm-hmm. And then you wonder where the jobs are gone. And some of the time, it's private prisons, and they make money off of this. And it's a money-making scheme. And, well, we don't get to endanger our lives. We'll just, oh, you smoke pot. You have to go dig the ditch right in front of the fire at 8 cents an hour.
So I want to be absolutely clear about something. The inmates who are allowed to do this type of work have to be nonviolent. They have to be people who don't pose any type of risk to society. They've been in prison for things like drug possession. Again, nonviolent offenses. People who have been convicted of rape or murder or who are on death row, death row or life sentences, those individuals aren't even considered for this. So again, these are nonviolent offenders, but also just keep in mind that since they usually end up doing the more dangerous work, they're more likely to lose their lives as a result. So just to give you examples from this year alone, so far two inmates have died in the line of duty, along with one civilian wildland firefighter. The first, a 26-year-old by the name of Matthew Beck, who was crushed by a falling tree. The second, a 22-year-old, Frank Anaya, who was fatally wounded by a chainsaw. So because of the prison reforms in California, the number of inmate firefighters has fallen 13% since 2008. So again, state politicians, officials, they're scrambling to figure out what to do, and they don't want to hire professional firefighters, because that means that not only are they going to have to pay these individuals more, they also have to pay for a pension and all sorts of benefits, and they don't want to do that.
It should be wonderful news that we've lost 13% of California's inmates.
Right.
Hey, there's less prisoners, less crime. That's wonderful. And we're not locking people as many people up as we used to for having a joint. It's like locking people up for having a beer. Oh, we're not. I mean, during Prohibition, beer was illegal. We'd lock people up, and if it was today, we wouldn't just lock them up. We'd send them into the middle of a fire and say, "All right, now go work for us for 8 cents a day." So it's wonderful news that California is not doing that. But now that we have the fights, hire people, hire actual American citizens to do the jobs instead of slave labor.
So the argument is, just real quick, just to get into the numbers, the argument is, well, if we hire actual firefighters to do this job, well, then it's going to cost taxpayers $100 million a year. Well, how much do you think it costs taxpayers to imprison nonviolent offenders? And by the way, you made a really great point about private prisons and how they use this type of slave labor in order to honestly pad their own pockets. But in this case, we're talking about state prisons. We're not even talking about private prisons.
So everybody's gotten used to this now. And so even in a so-called progressive state like California, we're still doing this to people and having them work for 8 cents an hour while they endanger their lives. It's unacceptable. So yes, taxpayers paying more for firefighters is a problem. By the way, one of the reasons we should actually do something about climate change. Now this is the one of the largest fires in California history, and it's happening in December when fire season is supposed to be over already, but it's not over because of climate change. So let's do something about that. And by the way, this is one of the public costs that are put on all of us because the oil companies wanted to privatize their profits and maximize their profits, which they don't share with us. They make us bear the cost. But I would rather do that than to enslave more people for doing something as innocent as smoking a joint.
Agreed. All right, let's move on to some other news. The Los Angeles Times analyzed something known as the Brady List. This is essentially a list of cops in Los Angeles who have been either accused or convicted of bad behavior, misconduct, criminal activity. And a lot of these people have not been fired. A lot of these people have served as individuals who testify in criminal cases. And now this question is coming up about whether or not prosecutors or defense attorneys will have access to this database, to this list, in order to ensure that justice is served in cases where these cops are involved. So to give you some more information about this, back in the early 2000s, there were reforms in the LAPD. Under Sheriff Baca, there was a ton of misconduct. And so when the new sheriff came in, they started compiling the Brady List. And the whole point was to kind of keep an eye on cops that might be doing things that are unlawful. Now, the secret sheriff's department list now includes about 300 deputies with histories of dishonesty and similar misconduct. Now, the most recent list that the LA Times was able to obtain was from 2014. So things may have changed since then, but here's what we know so far. Sheriff Jim McDonald wants to give the names on the list to prosecutors who are required by law to tell criminal defendants about evidence that would damage the credibility of an officer called as a witness. So again, these are people who would testify in these cases. The deputies have been identified as potential witnesses in more than 62,000 felony cases since 2000. In many of those cases, the deputies' misconduct would probably have been relevant in assessing their credibility. Okay, so now let's break down some of the misconduct cases. In one case, there was a cop who lost evidence, and that evidence was a bloodied shirt. So he thought it would be a great idea to take taco sauce, spread it all over a different shirt, and then take photos of that and use that as evidence in a case.
He likes tacos.
I mean, okay. There's also other cases. Let's go to graphic 58. One deputy pepper sprayed an elderly man in the face and then wrote a false report to justify arresting him.
No, cops assaulting citizens and then pretending the citizens assaulted them. I have never, a case like that, Look, there's two different kinds of cases here. One is the idiot or corrupt cop, which some police departments actually do want to root out. I would actually say, and this is anecdotal, I don't have statistics based on this, but I would imagine that most police departments want to root out the corrupt cops. Okay, corrupt meaning I'm taking money, I'm doing this, or I'm a buffoon who's putting taco sauce all over the evidence. A lot of that'll get covered up, but in a lot of the cases, they don't want those cops, okay? Then there's a second kind of cases where, I beat the shit out of a guy, and then I then pretended that he assaulted me or resisted arrest.
The brutality cases, and also the sexual misconduct cases, which are also listed in this Brady list. So one of the other examples was that another cop pulled over a stranger and received oral sex from her in his patrol car. He had alleged that it was completely consensual, but the woman complained about it the day after and said, no, it wasn't consensual, I was afraid. I'm talking about a uniformed cop with a gun, and I felt pressured, I didn't know what to do.
If you think a boss saying let's have sex is non-consensual, and it is, right? There's a power dynamic issue there, might intimidate the woman, right? Or the guy, depending on the circumstance. Wait till you get a load of a cop asking for sex with a gun, okay? So he's got the gun on him, we've seen what cops do from time to time in America. Mm-hmm. Yes, that would be coercive. And besides which, she said immediately afterwards, no, I didn't agree to it.
Exactly. So look, at the heart of this issue is whether or not prosecutors will have access to the list in order to do their jobs properly. Because remember, if these cops have been found to make false reports, or plant evidence, or anything like that, well, that could really have an impact on the outcome of a trial, especially a criminal trial that they're testifying in. And what's happening is the police union is saying, no, we don't want any prosecutor to have any access to this whatsoever. Also keep in mind that the list includes several deputies still with the department who were convicted of crimes, one for filing a false arrest report and another who was charged with domestic battery but pleaded no contest to a lesser offense. And so if you take a look at this graph, it'll show you what the majority of misconduct cases involved. So dishonesty by far is the largest percentage there. There's also family violence, immoral conduct, stealing, and sexual misconduct as well.
So I want to give the sheriff's office here credit, because it's easier to go after that first bucket that I talked about, the taco sauce guys and the guys dealing with the drug dealers and taking money on the side. It's harder to tackle the more systemic issue of violence against citizens and then lying about it, or course of sex with citizens and then lying about it. And here they are taking it on. Now, almost every union in the country has been beat down, except the police union.
Yeah.
They are ferocious, and whereas the other unions could help use some help in actually representing their members against the corporate power, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. In the case of the police, there's no corporations, so no one to crush them. It's just their union versus the citizens, right?
Right. And by the way, I am in favor of unions, even the police union, but there needs to be bounds of reason.
Accountability,
exactly. And so I don't want cops to needlessly lose their jobs when they haven't really done anything wrong. But in cases like this, where you're talking about false reports, when you're talking about planting evidence, when you're talking about sexual misconduct, I mean, really, you're going to protect these individuals' jobs to the point where they're still able to have input in the outcome of a criminal case. And by the way, this statement by the union drives me insane. So the union representing the sheriff's deputies argues that giving prosecutors the names on the list would needlessly harm the careers of deputies and could jeopardize numerous criminal prosecutions in which they played a role. Needlessly harm their careers? Let me ask you guys something. If you are found guilty of any type of misconduct within your office, would you lose your job?
Yeah, and imagine you go walk into your boss's office. Look, I might have stolen a couple of $1,000 worth of equipment, but if you say that to people, it'll harm my career. Yeah, maybe then you shouldn't have stolen the thousands of dollars of equipment, right?
Yeah.
So it's a totally theoretical case, okay? So in this case, some of the stuff was the corruption that I'm talking about with the drug dealers, right? Mm-hmm. So thousands of dollars, and then you walk in and you go, what, you're going to ruin my reputation by saying that I took money from a drug dealer? But you did take money from a drug dealer, right? So and that's one of the many hypothetical cases. Not in their case, not hypothetical, but real cases. Mm-hmm. So that's maddening for a second reason, too. So you're saying people who might have been innocent but got prosecuted with the false evidence that these cops worked up on them, we shouldn't let them know because it might hurt the cops' reputation and career?
No, yes.
Yeah, of course we should let them know. By law, we have to let them know that they might have made up evidence against them.
Right, and not only that, they're concerned about the cops' career, but they're not concerned about making sure that justice is really served in these criminal cases. Because some of this evidence might be faulty, it might be planted, whatever it is. The witness testimony, if the cop is the one testifying, could be misleading, could be false, whatever it is. Someone could be found guilty of a crime they did not commit as a result of this misconduct. And their argument is, oh, this could jeopardize numerous criminal prosecutions. No, these criminal prosecutions are already jeopardized. Like, there's already an issue there.
And they should be jeopardized because we don't know if they were actually guilty or innocent. And by the way, the last part of this puzzle that's maddening is, so they've in some cases attacked, abused, etc., citizens. That's problem number one. Problem number two is they might have put away people who were perfectly innocent by making up evidence. Problem number three is now a lot of guys who were guilty might have to go free because we don't know which evidence was reliable and which one wasn't.
Right.
So, and that's also terrible. That's also a miscarriage of justice. But you don't serve justice by covering up all the wrongdoing and saying some were innocent, some were guilty. Let's just not tell them. That's not how America is supposed to work. So what has been happening is atrocious. But again, to give credit to the sheriff's department, and as we've told you, not all the cops are the same, not all the sheriff's officers are the same. And in this case, they are taking corrective action for which they should be complimented and lauded.
Absolutely. We got to take a break. Let's do that.
Okay, when we come back, evangelical women, we're going to have strong opinions. They have strong opinions about what morality is. We have strong opinions about their morality when we return. All right, back on the Young Turks. Our members of the day are Reed Capelli and Julia Lohr. Today in the post game, which we'll have after Rebel Headquarters, I'm going to do two things. One is a story about Jeanine Pirro that we didn't get to today. And it gets to an unfortunate fact, which we're going to talk about a little bit in the next story. So an extra story for you guys. Plus, I want to talk about something uplifting, which is the movie Coco. I saw it over the weekend with my family. Oh, it's just wonderful.
Really?
Yeah, wonderful. And then I want to tell you my different family members' reactions because it's hilarious.
Okay.
So tytnetwork.com/join to become a member and check out the post games and get the whole to our show and Rebel Headquarters now. One tweet for you guys. Brandon Coates says, the worst part about the firefighter convicts, if they are felons, they can't be hired as regular firefighters when they get out.
Best point that I forgot to make. Thank you. Yeah, that's true.
Yes, so the great irony and injustice of that. All right, what's next, Anna?
Okay. Over the weekend, the name Keaton Jones became a household name in the United States. A viral video was posted, of him, which then went viral. And in that video, Keaton Jones, who is a middle schooler, was talking about his experience being bullied at his school in Knoxville, Tennessee. So here he is, he's just a sweet kid, and you watch the video, and he's sobbing, he's crying, he's explaining to his mom what it's like to be bullied. Classmates, he told his mother, had poured milk on him and stuffed ham in his clothes. He was quoted as saying that they make fun of my nose, they call me ugly, they say I have no friends. Why do they bully? What's the point of it? Why do they find joy in taking innocent people and finding a way to be mean to them? People that are different don't need to be criticized about it. It's not their fault. And then at the very end of the video, he says, it'll get better, I guess. And then he just kind of like looks away. He's not even convinced of that. Like, it was just such a heartbreaking video to watch.
Yeah, look, man, as a parent, it's heartbreaking. You also just keep thinking, what could you do? What can you do, right? Because if I heard somebody doing that to my kids, my blood would boil. But you can't get into the middle of a 9-year-old fight, right? And it's so frustrating to have your kids going through that at school, for them to pour milk on him, and oh God, it's, man, so, what is wrong with us as human beings, man? For kids, we do have to socialize, folks. If we don't, they wind up, unfortunately, we got good instincts as human beings and collaborative in a lot of ways, but we've got some really nasty instincts as humans as well. And unfortunately, some part of our culture encourages that here in America.
Yeah.
It's not like that everywhere.
So there are twists and turns to this story that I will get to in just a second, but I wanted to jump in with my commentary so far on what I just talked about, because and I really hope that he doesn't see this video, because it's what I'm about to say is probably discouraging. It doesn't get better. It doesn't get better. Like, this is, no, it doesn't though. I thought it gets better, but it doesn't. We are a nation of bullies. And I'm not saying that every single person is terrible and they're pouring milk on each other. We just elected a bully. We elected someone who consistently on a daily basis does nothing other than bully people, right? Like, I think that says something about where we are as a country right now. And do I think we can get better? Absolutely. But think about how professional trolls are now running the government, okay? They're in the president's ear. That's the situation we're dealing with. So at the moment, it's very hard for me to pull a kid like this aside and be like, no, it gets better. Especially when on a daily basis, you deal with rape threats, death threats, people doxing you, people talking about how they're gonna kill you. That's a daily thing, right? And so no, it doesn't get better.
Yeah, so Anna's definitely a little bit more pessimistic about it. I'm a little bit more optimistic about it. But the state of affairs, she's right about. I mean, right now we have unleashed bullies throughout the world, throughout the country, and this is by how fascism started, right? They started bullying the opposition into cowering, and then once they cowered, then they would take away more rights and more rights. And there are monsters out there right now that are going around trying to ruin people's lives and with lies, and they don't care, and they're encouraged by the bully in chief. That he got to be president by bullying everybody, by putting stupid nicknames on them, and didn't matter whether he was right or wrong. He would lie with impunity. He said, now Ted Cruz is a terrible guy, but Ted Cruz's dad did not kill JFK. That is insane. But Trump said that to smear him. Trump had his friends at the National Enquirer write a story about how Ted Cruz had 5 mistresses. He doesn't mind lying. He's a bully. And so he has encouraged every other bully in the country to go wild. And right now they are wilding. So my only hope is that I've seen in my life that in my experience, sometimes things do get better. Look, it's easier for me to say I was a big kid. And I had a lot of fight in me. So when people tried to bully me, I enjoyed fighting back. And I enjoyed standing up for the smaller kids who were getting bullied. I was happy to raise my hand and say, if you want to fight somebody, I'm your Huckleberry, right? Mm-hmm. And it worked. People stopped bullying. And sometimes it takes somebody to stand up, or a couple of different people to stand up. And maybe we encourage each other and stand up together. And I think that's what's going to happen nationwide too. But right now, we're knee deep in bullies. That is true. I see the way out, but it isn't an easy way. But this story also gives you hope, because people stood up together.
People did definitely stand up for this kid, and it was heartwarming to say the least. So there were a number of celebrities who saw the video, and they wanted to, you know, just offer their support. Delaney Walker, a tight end for the Tennessee Titans, offered Keaton and his family tickets to the team's New Year's Eve game against the Jacksonville Jaguars. Other football players also did similar stuff. Chris Evans is another example. He's an actor, of course. He wrote to Keaton and said, don't let them make you turn cold. I promise it gets better. While those punks are at your school deciding what kind of people they want to be in this world, how would you and your mom like to come to the Avengers premiere in LA next year? So, you know, all sorts of like sweet offerings. And then there was an individual in New Jersey who started a crowdfunding effort to raise money. And they raised about $57,000. And then there had to be a halt to that fundraiser because people started investigating the kid's family, and they came across a post by his mother, Kimberly Jones, that, you know, showed her, I guess, support, affinity, whatever you want to say for the Confederate flag. Let's just take a quick look at graphic 74. And it'll just show you what people came across. And so, and she also talks about butthurt Americans. If you aren't bleeding, no bones are sticking out, and you can't breathe, stop crying. For the love, some folks clearly never picked a switch. And before y'all start talking to me about metaphorical, emotional, financial, or historical blood and brokenness, don't join a group.
Okay. Okay, well, look, I don't care about her affinities.
Yeah.
And so if you want to have that influence, whether you give money to the family or not, I get it. That's totally 100% your prerogative, and I understand that. But let's not investigate the family, okay? Let's just look, the kid needs help. People offered help. Wonderful, okay? Put the money aside. So the football players wanted to help, the celebrities wanted to help. That's great, that's great. I don't care what his mom's political opinions are, and it's not his political opinions, he's just a kid. Mm-hmm. So stick with your original instinct of helping the kid who needs help. It does, and don't worry about anything else, and I don't want to do what the alt-right does. Well, now let's dive into what the family is and smear them and go after them. Just take the moment for what it is, and do the right thing. And I'm glad at least that the kid got a lot of emotional support from people all across the country, including liberal Hollywood, mm-hmm. okay, and white people and African Americans and everybody as a country stood up for him. That's a great moment. Let's concentrate on that.
All right, moving on. Penny Young Nance is the head of an evangelical women's organization known as Concerned Women for America. And recently she appeared on NPR to discuss the Alabama Senate race involving Roy Moore. And her argument is that, yeah, maybe an accused child molester is a little better than electing a pro-choice Democrat. Don't believe me? Take a listen.
But here's Roy Moore. He's accused of having had inappropriate relations or even assaulting teenagers, including one who was as young as 14. He's effectively denied everything. Does that make him someone who's worthy of being in the Senate?
Well, I think that's a question for the people of Alabama. I mean, that's what they're going to decide tomorrow. They have, unfortunately, the Democrats could have won this handily if they'd been willing to put forward a pro-life Democrat. You know, in the past, we had plenty of those, and slowly but surely, they've been run out of the party. This is going to be, 2018 is going to be a very close election. The numbers in the Senate are 52-48. I counted about 9 races that would be competitive if they would be willing to support pro-life Democrats.
So she's pro-life so that the kids can be born and then molested by Roy Moore.
Yeah, I wish we could make you guys listen to the full interview because I would argue that it actually gets worse because she makes it clear that she wouldn't vote for Doug Jones because of the fact that Doug Jones is pro-choice. I don't understand the reasoning there. We're talking about living, breathing human beings who have been molested as kids, as teenagers, and for some reason their lives aren't as important as the lives of zygotes.
And besides which, you know, look, I'll get to my favorite Bible quote because all of this is based on the mythology that God is against abortion and he believes that a zygote is the same exact thing as a human being. And that's just not true. It's not true in the Bible. Bible talks about how God breathed life into Adam once he was born out of the womb, okay? gave him breath. But besides that, Numbers 5:20-22. But if you have gone astray while married to your husband, and you have made yourself impure by having sexual relations with a man other than your husband, here the priest is to put the woman under this curse. May the Lord cause you to become a curse among your people when he makes your womb miscarry and your abdomen swell. May this water that brings a curse enter your body so that your abdomen swells or your womb miscarries. There it is. The Bible is pro-abortion. If they think you cheated on your husband, they will give you a toxic potion that will cause a miscarriage, an abortion. I didn't say that. I think it's a terrible thing to do. But the Bible is in favor of that. Read the Bible. It's not what you consider pro-life. So it's not. This is not even pro-choice. It makes the woman drink poison to cause the abortion. But the Bible is definitively pro-abortion. It is. You know, if you're uncomfortable with that fact, that's your problem, not my problem. Read your own Bible.
So Concerned Women for America in the past has been critical of things like same-sex marriage. They've been critical of equal rights for the gay community, for the LGBT community. But they, at least Penny Young Nance, I can't speak for everyone who's part of this organization, at least Penny Young Nance thinks it's better to vote for an accused child molester over a Democrat. Like, I what are you concerned about? Like, your concerns are not worth being concerned about, because the things you should be concerned about, you don't think are a big deal at all.
But she believes child molestation is okay because the Bible tells her to be against abortion. When it doesn't even say that, and you're willing to deal with monsters based on that false assumption. It's sickening. All right, we're out of time, guys. Bye-bye.